Real quick before this next song starts, that previous song is like mine and my sweetheart's official song. So depend on how my today's go. Simple truth. Sure, a lot of guys feel that way and allow it to get up under their skin. Well, I can't be the only one that's drinking and sad and lonely and cursing bad girl's name, but they usually degrade and say bad words to the female.
Maybe someday you'll walk into some bar I'm singing in.
Not with this voice.
You hang your head in sorrow and cry. You see the shape that I'm in.
Feeling sorry for themselves.
Sad and lonely, I wonder if you feel the same.
Project me.
Tell me, am I the only one drinking, cursing your name? Tell me, am I the only one drinking, cursing your name?
Amen. So I played both of those songs in hour number one, but forgot to touch on them. Song number one, as I mentioned at the end of it, that is my dearly beloved. And I don't know if that's proper grammar, but that's our song. You know, I grew up Ocean Way, poor redneck, unabashedly comfortable. And even if I won the lotto, which I never will because I don't play, but let's say some mysterious windfall should be bestowed upon me. You know what? I'd probably do something like build a library and put the true history books in it. Or the Little League field that I coached at, my father coached at, was president, that we, me and my brothers played at, we coached at. That's such a staple of our little town. You know, maybe donate, fix it up, do things like that. Of course, I'd get me, you know, I'd have a decent house and, you know, a few material things. But I would never lose sight of who I am. And I say that with confidence. There's no hesitation, because I can promise you, I would probably have the same smoker. I'm sitting here looking at Dutch. I would either put him in a frame or get something, I don't want to say more respectful, but more appropriate for the second conservative president in the 20th century, the first being Calvin Coolidge, I've mentioned before. The Declaration of Independence, which is also in a cheap Walmart frame. I mean, this sucker was probably like $2. You know, I was married. I don't even remember the situation, but I ordered this from the Library of Congress, the Declaration, the Bill of Rights, and the Constitution. It's like 10 or 11 pages total. And so the Declaration of Independence, the most profound, important, just incredible piece of political rhetoric ever produced, either written or verbal. It changed the course of history and started the belief that mankind, not started, but borrowed and propagated the belief that man is free simply by being born. We have inherent rights, so to speak. A term that's overused, misused, abused, so on and so forth. But you may be born into slavery, despotism, but that's not the natural human state. And this country was the first to say, look, you're over across the pond. You've got the greatest military ever to roam this earth. And we're just some peasants and some farmers and, you know, a few meager, you know, lawyers, tradesmen, importers, exporters, etc. We know that more than likely we're no match for the parental government, Great Britain, the king, the despot, the not, I don't want to say totalitarian, but the one person rule for the most part. And we'll probably get our ass kicked. We may not even have 100% of our own people behind us, which they didn't. People talk about America so divided and, oh, woe is me, what are we going to do? I've said this before, and I'll say it over and over. One third of the American people did not want to break from the British crown, from the king, from despotism, from tyranny. They were comfortable, just like the slaves leaving Egypt under Moses. What little bit I study or scholarship, I fully believe now. 2-3 months ago, I wasn't sure. What I believe now is that God, you know, when I was in Sunday school, you know, hearing they escaped slavery, and then God, the chosen people, makes them wander in the damn woods for 40 years. Now, as a child, I just heard the Sunday school story. I don't know that I ever heard a preacher discuss it. Through my seeking of knowledge, of wanting to learn, of being a better man, so on and so forth, it was offered, and I've done what little bit of research, scholarship, and I'm convinced, because what God did by making the chosen people, the Jews, wander in the wilderness for 40 years is the same thing that Thomas Jefferson said in the Declaration of Independence. That people, and this is not even close to the quote or anything, it's not a Joe Biden, yeah, you know the thing, but the Jefferson made the point that people will suffer long suffrages. That's human nature. A lot of times, just to have purpose. And we don't get it, especially nowadays, the way our circle of freedom is continuously shrinking. And we're able to see what we're losing, how we're losing it, you know, how rapidly we're losing it. Nevertheless, getting back to, oh, wait, time out, squirrel. Yeah, I went full, you know, like family of squirrels on that one. So I wanted to talk about the two songs I played. When I talk about and introduce and start off being somebody poor and not allowing money to change me. Here's an example. My brother said, you know, he encouraged me to start this podcast. I knew that I would probably get more out of it for myself than, in all likelihood, any other individual on the face of this earth would get out of it. You know, knowing my style, knowing my mannerisms, how I talk, you know, I got it. And it's, you know, people to listen to Ben Shapiro, they got to slow it down. To listen to me, they're like, come on, get to the point, you know, what, or get back to the original point, or, you know, for God's sake, I got it. And as I've mentioned many times, it's cathartic for me. But he said, you know, you're going to get famous and move away, get rich and famous and move away. Go to some radio station in Atlanta or some shit. And I'm like, dude, I appreciate the encouragement and the confidence. Trust me, I do. You've never steered me in the wrong direction. I was forthright and honest and said, this will probably be more for my good than anybody. But I don't care. At least I can say I'm trying, I'm doing something. And that's not a cop-out. That's not, you know, it is for me. But to a degree, whether anybody listens or not, the knowledge is being put out there. So if for some reason this took off, or, you know, my sweetheart played the lottery or the Powerball or something, and we ended up with a gazillion dollars, I would still go right into that kitchen and cook ham hocks and beans and rice, or pull that turkey out of the freezer, 12-pound turkey, thaw it out, brine it, and throw it on my smoker. I've got 3 pizzas in the refrigerator, or the freezer. Mozzarella, pepperonis in the refrigerator, mushrooms, you know, to doctor it up. And I would use that, oh, and I got a pound of hamburger meat. I would use that stuff before I went to the store to buy other things. that's just how I am. It's, you know, yeah, there's times where money may be tight or whatever, but that's just in my nature. Part of my point in this podcast, in its inception, is to give you hopefully some confidence to be true to who you are, to be unashamed, unapologetic, to understand that thou shalt not lie, murder, you know, honor thy mother and thy father, commit adultery, steal, you know, covet, believe in life, which is one of the things Biden early on tries to set the stage, you know, well, this is patriotism and democracy and, you know, yank my wanker, you know, pull my pud, and then says people that believe in pro-life, and there was another caveat, and I don't recall, you know, have the extremist point of view, the extremist ideology. Time out. Are you seriously sitting up there Thursday night and going to attempt to say any person, regardless of religion, regardless of faith or no faith, any person that believes that whether conception starts or life starts at conception or life starts at heartbeat? I don't think it's disputable. I don't think anybody can make an argument after heartbeat. I will debate you and reason and argue why I think it starts at conception. But we can have that rational, intelligent debate. There should be no question that once a heartbeat is detected, that that is a life. And in essence, very early on in that speech, he said for those, and however he phrased it, whether they don't believe in a woman's right to choose, which I think is how he framed it, that do not believe in the right of privacy, which there is no right of privacy. That was bastardized in the Roe v. Wade 72 or 73 decision, where they manufactured from whole cloth the bullshit right to privacy. You don't have a right. Our rights are not bestowed by a government. The philosophers, you know, from the Greeks to, we've talked about John Locke, Second Treatise of Government, natural rights. Our rights are ours simply for being bipedal. In other words, you walk on 2 feet. Homo sapiens, humans, being born, that's your rights. You may not live in a free country. Most of all of human history has lived under some form of tyranny, of despotism. It doesn't matter whether you believe history goes back 2,000 years, 6,000 years, 100,000 years. It does not matter how far back human beings started roaming the earth. Not whatever they say we evolved from. I'm talking upright, bipedal, Homo sapiens. Okay? From that time, mankind is a social being. Think about it. We like groups, parties, gatherings, events. We're social. You cannot have a society and not have some type of structure. So the bad people throughout history knew if they could get the power and intimidate that they could rule. I think I mentioned this last hour. It's a fact. It's been documented in biographies history, so on and so forth. I think even Shakespeare may have, maybe Henry VIII, but don't quote me, in one of his plays. But the point is, it's well known that tyrants, that despots are unhappy. Why are they unhappy? Because everybody is afraid of them. Everybody conforms. Nobody wants to piss them off. Everybody's afraid of their life. And so they just acquiesce. There's no resistance. If the king, let's say the king likes to cook, and he says to Joe Blow, whatever, how's my macaroni and cheese? And this dude is a despot, a tyrannical dictator. You want to tell him that his friggin' macaroni and cheese sucks? No. That's why throughout human history, it is known that those types of individuals are never happy. Just as we know through, let's just say, the last 110 to 20 years of the progressive movement, that they're never happy. It's never enough. They have to push, push, push. They never stop. They never stop. What I hope is that we wake up. We realize where we're at and the potential for where we're going. And we push back peacefully and with our votes. Anyway, Squirrel, getting back to sticking to your principles, who you are, etc. So the first song is by Tyler Childers, and the name of it is All Yourn, Y-O-U-R, apostrophe N. When me and my sweetheart first started talking, I don't think either one of us was looking for a relationship. I know I wasn't. I don't think she was. And, we're kind of struggling. I was on the road, over the road trucker. Nevertheless, there was something there. It was organic, is how I like to put it. Neither of us pushed for a relationship, nor did either of us fish or, try to suck the other into a relationship. It just happened. Just as serendipitous as if I'd met her in the Home Depot or something. But I've always, and I've talked about this before, this Kentucky music. How, back when I was growing up, you had Loretta Lynn and Coal Miner's Daughter, and how they sung from the soul. And you could feel the lyrics. You could feel, if it was a sad song, you could feel the pain. There's just something about being raised in that part of the country and the way those people sing. So here I am at the time, 52 years old, and I'm going through Kentucky, Southern Kentucky. And I'm like, okay, you know what? Hell, I'm just going to tell her. I said, we're talking somehow about music. And I said, well, I got funny tastes. I like, Dean Martin, Frank Sinatra. Not only have I seen Tony Bennett, I've shaken his hand. But I like those crooners when they could say the same things these rude, crude rappers say today, but they said it respectfully and without being crude and without disrespecting women. Nevertheless, I like classic rock from the 70s, especially The Who and Pink Floyd. The rock operas that they furthered, they didn't start it, but they both understood it and used it. And so I'm a fan. Hank Jr., Hank Sr., Hank III, Hank IV is now on the scene. I haven't heard his music, but so in other words, it's across the board. And so I tell her, I don't know where this is going, but dadgummit, I'm not going to be shy about what I like. I'm going to tell you. Just like with politics. No more pussyfooting around. I'm a conservative. If you're not, regardless, all you have to do is say, I'm not a conservative. That doesn't mean it's the death blow, but it's going to be an uphill battle. And, you know, you better bring something else to the table. And I don't mean that in a disrespectful way. But it just, politics isn't everything. But for me, it is a big thing. Especially if you cannot have a discussion in the arena of ideas without getting butt hurt. Your feelings hurt, especially when you're wrong or proven wrong. So, nevertheless, I'm like, you know, Dwight Yoakam, back first come out in the 80s, come out right about the same time Randy Travis did. Although Randy Travis was just a different style of music, a different region. But Dwight Yoakam, that first album, Guitars, Cadillacs, Hillbilly Music, here it is, 2022, and I still listen to it. So I tell this chick that. She's from Maine. She's a Boston Red Sox fan, for God's sake. I'm a Yankees fan, grown up my whole life, you know. And my bitter enemy, arch rival, like Pittsburgh and Dallas, New York and Boston, New York and the Dodgers. I mean, come on. My second wife was a Yankee from Pennsylvania. And here, this chick that I'm kind of getting sweet on is from the most northern state, possibly outside of Alaska. And I'm like, you know what? Hell with it. This is who I am. This is what I like. And you know, I was sweet on her. So I sent her that particular song. And she's like, are you kidding me? Tyler Childers? I love this dude. And so she starts sending me a couple of songs from like her library, whatever her music app is. And I'm just amazed. Again, one of those moments where as I'm traveling across America, I think, it was, I don't know, 42 or 44 states that I visited and never really understood that just because you're a Yankee, you're born above the Mason-Dixon line, there's still rednecks all over this country. We're all the same. We don't talk the same. We live a little bit differently. But at our core, we're all the same. All of us. And so that was another reinforcement when this chick liked the dude and liked the song. And then as things evolved, that became our song. I was kind of like the first, I don't want to say bond, but you know, whatever. Anyway, I can't explain it and I'm wasting time if I try to. The second song is Sturgill Simpson. He's also a Kentucky boy. A little bit different style. But he still, some of his songs still is in the same tradition. One of the things I like about him, that song, which was titled I Wonder, is off of an album called Cutting Grass, which is pretty clever, I thought. I like the dude. I think he's a great singer. I think he's underrated. I like him. But he's released 4 or 5 albums in his career. And so he's picked songs from these albums and he sings the same song, but with a bluegrass tint, a bluegrass melody or music or whatever. And it's just incredible. And so, even though his regular released albums, he didn't have as much music of Kentucky music, that type of genre that I like, he went back to his roots in these two albums, Cutting Grass. Cutting Grass 1, Cutting Grass 2. The song that I played, I Wonder, is one of my favorites for a variety of reasons. The caveat is that song, so far as I've been able to research, is not on any of his other quote-unquote studio albums. It's only on Cutting Grass Volume 1. I like the song. I like some of the lyrics, some of, I don't know if you could say philosophy, but I repeated early on in the song, all my tomorrows depend on how my 2 days go. That's another one of them simple Southern truths, true statements, because if I try to say truths again, I'm going to sound like I'm lisping, like Ethel Thayer from On Golden Pond. But it's just, it's as true as in the South, what I talked about earlier. How do you know who your daddy is? You know because your mama told you so. All of my tomorrows depend on how my today goes. Really and truly, does it get any more simple? Now, of course, there's the potential of, you know, a storm coming through in the middle of the night. There's all kinds of what ifs and other things. But, you know, I know when I was in school, Charles Swindoll has that essay, I guess, attitude. And that's the first message coming out of this song that tells you or attempts to convey that you're in charge. You can feel sorry for yourself, which is basically what the dude's, the guy in the song is not only feeling down, lonely, depressed, feeling sorry for himself. He's going to sit in a bar, waste his life away, and lament if since the girl doesn't contact him and they haven't spoken or seen each other in 10 years, if she walked in and seen him in his current state simply because she left him, they're no longer together. The implication is it's the woman's fault. He's Skid Row bum playing in honky-tonks and it's her fault. And so he's saying, would you feel bad? And, you know, I kind of got into it last hour, the first hour, about these wussy, pussified, is that, I don't want to say a bad word. I'm not going to edit it. I put explicit when I post these. So, you know, but I still try not to. But guys today are, you know, I'm just going to say it, they're effing pussies. Feelings get hurt and, you know, and I've here's another one I've said over and over. Don Corleone, in the beginning of the first Godfather, what's the singer's name from California? Johnny Fontaine. He comes, he sits down on his desk. And Godfather is a respected term used in those circles that the movie was about, mafia, etc., La Cosa Nostra. But in this particular scene, Johnny Fontaine is Don Corleone, Marlon Brando's true godson, baptized as his godson. So that carries a little bit more weight. And he's crying, oh, I can't get this part. Oh, woe is me. Oh, this asshole Hollywood producer, blah, blah, blah. The dude's crying. And Marlon Brando, who's petting a cat. Now, here's a powerful head of a family. This is the kind of shit I'm talking about. Unequivocally comfortable in your own skin. This man is one of the most powerful men, arguably, in the country. More control than probably 75 to 80% of all of America's politicians. Not combined, but if you took all the senators and all the House of Representatives and just threw all, what is it, 538 in a pot, Don Corleone would have more power than 75 to 80% of them. If you take the president's cabinet or the head of the FBI, so that's the type of power this man has. And one could argue, as is made in The Godfather Part Two, with Michael Corleone, when he tells the senator, I'm not paying you, you're not strong-arming me, you're not blackmailing me, you're not going to threaten me because you don't like Italians and you're prejudiced. In fact, not only am I not going to pay you for the tax, what was called the gaming commission, like a fee to run a casino. So Michael Corleone says, not only am I not paying for it, you're going to pay for it. And the senator, a U.S. senator, looks at him and he's like, you're crazy. You've lost your mind. I'm a U.S. senator. Corleone, Michael, later tells his wife, when he comes back from Italy and asks her to marry, he knows it's one of the most powerful mafias in the country. And the potential wife, Kay, was her screen, the character's name. Diane Keaton is the actress. And so he says, Kay, in 10 years, the Corleone family will be totally legit. He didn't lie to her. That was his intent. He wanted to get away from the crime, the underbelly, and be legit and be something that his kids could be proud of and run and generations in the future. Not having to live the life that him, his brothers, and father lived. The American dream. You want better for your youngins than you had. The American effing dream. And so Kay's like, she doesn't believe him. He disappeared. He shot a police captain and a mafia capo, and he disappeared. He went to Italy for like 2 years. And she's like, he says, we're going to be legit. And she's like, how naive are you really? Because you're saying this like you believe it. But I can't believe that you actually believe it. And she's like, you have so much potential. He was a war hero, all this stuff. His dad wanted him to be a powerful politician, Don Corleone, who we'll get back to here in a second. And she's like, senators, governors, congressmen, politicians, they don't have people killed. And Michael Corleone looks at her and he says, again, true, true words. Think of Biden. Think of the Clintons. Kay, who's being naive now? If you think I'm open about, the crime, the gambling, the whores, whatever. I cover my ass, but people know who I am. People know my business. These politicians in a far off land that make rules and laws for the rest of us, and all they care about is their own power and control of as much as they can control. Okay? Now, The Godfather was in 72, I think. The number two, the second one may have been 74. Don't quote me, but that's to the best of my recollection. Getting back to Don Corleone at the beginning of the first movie, Johnny Fontaine, he grabs him by the tux, the lapel, shakes him, and says, you could start by being a man. And it's like, that's what these effing dudes need today. You can start by being a man. We're not talking about, being, what was Leave It to Beaver's dad or Danny Thomas. His Father Knows Best. I'm trying to think of those 50s and 60s shows that were wholesome that we grew up on. But you don't have to be that guy. Be responsible for you and yours. Do the best you can. Try to provide. Doesn't mean that you got to live with a baby mama. You can do your own thing, but be responsible. Take care of the youngins. If you and the missus, the baby mama, have a dispute, have a dispute. Don't If the girl wants, this is from my past, one of my buddies, good buddy. I'm not going to mention any names. But his wife, I went to school with her. He was 6 years younger than I was. But, you know, I always liked the girl because she liked to flirt. I would never disparage her character and say she was loose or any comment like that because I don't know. She did like to flirt. I liked to flirt. Part of my past issues. And she was always a decent looking gal. But she decided, her and my buddy never got married. They had a son. Again, she's my age. He's 6 years younger than I am. She decides she's had a kid. She's getting on up here in age, mid-30s, whatever. And she wants a boob job. And this dude, he doesn't want to pay the child support. And I had to tell him over and over and over, dude, pay it. If she gets fake tits, let her get fake tits. What she does with the money is her business. You have to pay. The court says you have to pay. So make the payments. And he, eventually he did. And he got over it, got a new girl, got probably one of the best women on the face of this planet. The same dude I'm talking about ended up with. Beautiful woman, loyal, good woman. Matter of fact, she's from Asheville, North Carolina. Yeah, but what's wrong with a redneck girl? Nevertheless, so I touch on this, but these type of men, these wussies, these people who are afraid. I wore my DeSantis shirt on the way to Maine and on the way back. Proudly. I want to get more when I can afford it. When I can responsibly afford another shirt or two shirts. I can't right now, but I want to. I want to wear every day. I'll probably get a Trump DeSantis 2024 shirt. I've made no mistakes. There is no mistake. I don't want Trump to run. It's even getting worse, but it's not to puss out. In no way, shape, manner, or form is it to puss out or to show any weakness. I just think he could prove his credit wrong. His legacy is set with the Supreme Court. And, he ran not because he needed the money, not because he needed the name recognition or the power or anything. He ran for the pure love and freedom of this country and to pass it on, as Reagan said in his Time for Choosing speech in 1964, stumping for Barry Goldwater. You've heard me talk about it. I've played excerpts. I've read passages. Get to YouTube. I listen maybe once every 2 or 3 months. Ronald Reagan, 1964, A Time for Choosing. And it's hard to believe that up until Donald Trump, with all his flaws, his brashness, his uncouth or unrefined or whatever the F they throw at him, we've had H.W. Bush establishment, G.W. Bush establishment. We've had Clinton for 8 years, Obama for 8 years. Ronald Reagan from 80 to 88. This is 02 or 22. So quick math, that's 34 years from 88. If my math is correct, which I can't make any promises. 34 years since Reagan left office. 2 8-year or two-term Republican presidents that not only didn't hold the Reagan line. I started watching 300, that movie, Gerard Butler on the airplane. It's not quite, the way I've heard some of the story. I watched just over an hour. It's about an hour and 50 minutes. It's one of those things that I do want to learn more about. But as far as, well, I can't, I was going to say as far as I know, I don't know when that battle took place as far as chronologically, but I do know the Greek city-states, Athens, Sparta, you know, those places believed in freedom. They were the first republic to exist, and one of the models for our system of government. But in that movie, the king, who is Gerard Butler, Leonidas, and his wife, both have, I don't want to say soliloquies, but dialogues, or maybe dialogues is certainly not the right word. Scratch dialogues. Lines or statements. I don't know what you call it in movies. But they both, the point was made on multiple occasions that the reason they were going to fight, go against their tradition and this other backstory BS, but the reason they were going to fight is because they were free. They were not slaves. And so when he meets this his opponent, the king, or Xerxes, who in the film is a big, you know, impossible looking dude, claims to be a god, is worshipped as a god. He basically, he tells this insurmountable king and hit this massive army, the reason we will beat you, the reason why we have faith and we don't back down, and I cannot, the guy wanted him to kneel, to submit. And he makes kind of a joke, which for historical purposes would not have been said. I think this may be covered in Thucydides. Don't quote me on it. But Gerard Butler says, hey, I've been kicking the ass of your first wave of soldiers all day, and, you know, killing them and maiming them and throwing them up there to build a gauntlet, a wall, to keep you out, you know. So my leg is a little cramped. Basically, my leg's cramped from kicking your army's ass. Now, you know, that's not, trust me, how it really went down. It's good for drama, theatrical, etc. But the bottom line still holds true. Xerxes and his army were slaves. When they conquered a new place, a new nation, so to speak, they took those into slavery. It's been done, the Romans did it. I don't know so much about the Greeks. I do know Philip of Macedon, or is that right? Macedon, who was a father to Alexander the Great. Both of those guys in their conquests, when they defeated enemies, they took, I don't know what they did with the women and children. I just know that it was customary for hundreds of years as these guys, as one rose and fell and another one rose and fell, and, you know, the control and the power went from country to country, and it was all the same. And so what the movie, and I'm not quite sure of what the movie was trying to convey, is that they were free. They were not slaves. They were actually trained soldiers. If when the son was born and developed and trained, you were a soldier. If you were a male, if you were born sickly or weak or whatever, they just threw you like in a trash pile. Okay? That's true. That part is true. They discarded the weak. Okay? Kind of like hunters and conservation, nevertheless. So they the whole thing was train the young men to fight and to keep the tradition, keep the freedom, so on and so forth. So the girls, they, in their own manner of speaking, did the same type of thing with the girls. But if the son's growing up and he's, let's say, 18, 20 years old, and there's no girl suitable for breeding a elite soldier, fighting man, then the son would breed with the mother. Now, to us, that's like, whoa. But that was their culture to propagate, to continue the freedom that they had fought for, that their forefathers had fought for. When they were seven, they were pulled from the mother and put out in the wilderness to face the wolves and to this and the cold and to that. Horrible conditions. And they, you know, the dad and the mom loved the kid. They wanted him to survive and come back. But if he didn't, he wasn't worthy to fight. And it's rough. But they were free. And they fought to preserve and maintain freedom. That's why he said, that's why throughout human history, that's why our founding fathers, Sam Adams in the Revolution, that group who is a little bit different from the founding fathers, so to speak, that revolutionary guard, for lack of a better term, Sons of Liberty, those guys knew it was worth them dying. The Congress people that signed the Declaration of Independence, they knew that they would give up their lives, their farms, their fortune, their riches, their honor. They would give up whatever it took to get this country started, and started under the belief, the unequivocal, the true, unadulterated belief that man is born free simply by coming out of the womb. That our rights are given to us by the Almighty God, not by some dictator or some parliament or any other mortal man. And so if it took them dying to get this started, to break away from the most powerful military and kingdom the world has ever seen, they were willing to sacrifice the same way the Spartans were. That's why we remember stories of the Spartans. 300 men, allegedly. It's more than that, but the story is 300 Spartans fighting wave after wave after wave of the enemy and holding them off for a long time, because they were fighting for a purpose. They were fighting for freedom. You could make the argument the same thing in the Civil War, the North versus the South. I don't think it's quite applicable, but I would entertain the argument if somebody wanted to make that argument, and I wouldn't necessarily disagree. I would just simply say, prove it to me. I don't have any information to disagree, but you made the statement, you make the case, prove it to me. And if they did, then I would tend to believe that you could say that that purpose of freedom was enough to put them over the edge to victory. Again, personally, I don't think it's apples and oranges. I think it's two different concepts. I think it's totally two different situations that cannot be compared, simply because Sparta is fighting for their freedom, their wives or kids, and the future of their culture. America is fighting American versus American, brother against brother, so on and so forth. And just because you fought on the South did not mean that you wanted blacks to be slaves. That's nowhere near. That's a misnomer. That is a bald-faced lie that is propagated by the other side trying to create or propagate and foster derision, hostility, anarchy, violence, etc. And I ain't even got to that cocksucker Joe Biden and his speech last night. I don't know if I'll do it tonight. I'm at 57 and a half minutes. You know, I don't know. I'll tell you what, this is hour two. I'm going to make an effort. I don't know that I'll go the whole hour in hour three, but I would be remiss. I can't promise I'm going to address Biden in that speech specifically. I'm going to make my point that I've been making. Actually, I've been making it for years. People probably think I'm a cuckoo or, you know, conspiracy theorist or like they paint us right-wing extremists, so on and so forth. But I don't have to worry. Even if I am way off base, I'm not going to change what I believe and, you know, my principles. However, I don't have to anyway, because the same shit I've been talking about trying to tell people that are apolitical for 20, 30 years, if you don't pay attention, you deserve what you get. If you don't vote, then you're saying, I want my little Bambino, my little son, to go to kindergarten or first grade and there be a drag dude or chick or whatever. And he's, you know, playing with his thing. If you don't get involved, if you don't care, if you don't participate, you can't blame somebody when your kid ends up effed up. Anyway, shit, y'all done got me riled up. I'm running out of time. I will attempt to do another partial podcast. Thank you for playing along and listening to The Forgotten Conservative.